When do you go back to school?
March 8th, we start phasing in some special pups, and then, you know, slowly phasing them in throughout the month of March, with everyone back by the 22nd, the week of the 22nd.
Okay, good, good. Okay. Just waiting for the two people from the education department to get on, and then we'll start. Don't see them yet.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi there.
Good to see you. Good to see you all.
Good to see you. So we're just waiting for the two people from the education department to come on and then we'll start.
Thanks for saying. Yeah.
Okay. Seeing all these names, you're making me want to plan that social Zoom that we've been talking about way too long. I miss seeing everybody.
I know.
All of us are long overdue.
I know.
We won't recognize each other if we're not little bucks.
Hey, have you decided whether summer conference will be in person or hybrid or an option of both?
I don't know yet. I actually have a call with the National School Public Relations Association, because you know theirs in person and virtual. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know because I don't know. You know, a lot of people have expressed interest, but I don't know if they want to travel, if they're going to have the budget. So it's kind of hard. So I'll be putting out something shortly, but I'm just still kind of waiting to see.
Gotcha.
We're having our first in-person event tomorrow night, 600 people for Teacher of the Year, and we're doing it outdoors at a stadium, but we're streaming it live for those who just don't want to show up.
I understand. Good. Okay.
This is an option.
Okay.
Sounds like a pretty big deal.
A really big deal. So it's a new stadium, and they're wanting to form a relationship with the school district. So they were so accommodating, and they are so conscientious in terms of COVID-19 from, you know, temperature checks. Tomorrow night, everyone will have their temperature checked, and we 6 seats apart from everyone, and you get a box meal when you show up, and you carry your box meal to your seat. And but it's gonna happen. And so we're hoping that maybe it can be a bit of a prototype for graduation in the summer, kind of like a beta test. We'll see how it goes.
Well, good luck with that. That sounds great.
Thank you. Thanks.
The big in-person event is really not my own. This is, we're so close.
Yeah, Florida. It's a bold move. It's a bold move. So now everybody, and we actually, our superintendent spontaneously announced that we're going to be having live. Graduations, and we discussed it, but we'd not really talked that it was going to happen. He just sort of blurted it out at a news conference. So it was great. So it's out now. We figured this one out.
Yeah, execs have a nasty habit of springing stuff on people.
Hi, Tanya. This is Kelly Leone from the U.S. Department of Education.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. And we're just going to, we're waiting for Benjamin, right? He's supposed to join us.
Ben actually just messaged me. He's running a few minutes late. He got pulled into something. So he is going to do his very best to get here just as soon as he can. That's why I was a few minutes late too. But he sends his apologies in advance and is very much looking forward to connecting as soon as he's able to.
Okay, good. Well, then I think we should go ahead and start, and then hopefully he'll join on. So Michael Cassley is the council's executive director.
Hey, Kelly, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you, Michael?
Good. I'm Mike Casserly, the Executive Director of the Council of the Great City Schools, and I know you know Tanya already. I think those connections already got made, but also want to introduce you to Joanne Coley and Kaylin Hicks, who is on our communications staff. And on the line with you today are the public relations executives and communications directors from the big city public school systems all over the country, and they are the best communicators in the land, and I think you're going to find them terrific to work with, and they always have their pulse on everything that's going on in our big city school districts across the country. So I want you to, you know, feel welcome with our group, and also know that the expertise that our group has and all of the folks on the phone have are at your disposal when you need to have conversations or run ideas by folks about one thing or another that's likely to come up in the Department of Education. And that's true not only of the communications directors, it's also true of our academic folks, our superintendents, our legislative folks. Some of our staff contacts are on the line as well. And I'll let Tanya introduce those folks in a minute. Administrations in the past have often relied on our group just to run technical ideas by folks in the field, and we can put together the best in the country, and you see them on the line right now. And if there are issues that come up where you just really need an outside voice or an independent voice to run something by, Tanya is great in connecting you with communicators all across the country, because they really are the best in the land. Last thing I wanted to ask you to check and make sure that March 22nd is on Secretary Designate Cardona's calendar. We've invited him and had emails back and forth with Sheila Nix to make sure that he's able to speak to our group when they're all together as part of their legislative convening. But I wanted to just turn this back to Tanya and her team and say welcome to the Department of Education. And if there's anything that we can do to be helpful to you as you do the important work going forward, please let us know.
Thank you. That's incredibly, incredibly kind. If I could just take a moment, can I introduce myself to all of you so you have a bit of it about my background?
Yes.
So my name is, I'm Kelly. I'm currently in kind of warm Detroit. It was pretty frigid last week, but it's about 50 degrees now and the snow is melting. I come from Inglewood, California, was where I was born and raised there, and have been since college, worked in the DC area for about 15 years, doing a number of communications and constituent services related roles from K-12 to higher education. In fact, I cut my teeth in the chancellor's office at DC Public Schools, working on a rapid response constituent services team. So districts and communications and constituents work is actually where I got my start in this space and have continued it ever since. Worked in a president's office doing communications at a local university, spent some time at the Department of Education where I was previously the assistant press secretary. And then I've also worked in communications roles at think tanks in the higher education space. And most recently was at the Kresge Foundation based here in Detroit, doing communications work for the education grant making program there. So my experiences have, you know, spanned education, but have consistently been stakeholder engagement as well as strategic communications and sort of everything in between. So it is a bit of a return to the Department of Education for me. I was an appointee within the Obama Biden administration, and I'm delighted to be back again to serve the Biden-Harris administration. Things are different. It's a new set of priorities, but I'm here and ready to go, and I'm on day 7 on the job. So that is where I am, a little bit about me and a little bit about my background, and I'm delighted to partner with all of you and learn more about how, from the press standpoint, and that is my role, I am the press secretary for the Department of Education, how I can partner with each of you as the secretary, soon as he's confirmed, gets out and we begin our work in different cities and states and districts and that sort of thing. I imagine there are many ways that I could find to partner with each of you.
So Kelly, thank you very much. And Tanya, I'm going to jump off the line now. So the call's yours. And thank you everybody for being part of this call to introduce ourselves to the U.S. Department of Education. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Okay. Thank you, Kelly. As Mike said, these are, I guess, the best of the best here. We have, they're ranging from Cleveland to Wichita to Miami to like Broward County, Fort Worth, Pittsburgh, Aurora. So like they are the best. And one thing I just wanted to also introduce some of my colleagues in addition to my communications team, Joanne and Kaylin. We have Ricky Price-Baugh. She is the Council's Director of Academic Achievement. We have Jeff Simmerin. He's the Council's Director of Legislation. We have Gabrielle Uro. And Gabby, I get your title sometimes messed up. What is it?
Because it's a long one. Director of ELL Policy and Research. Hi.
Okay. And then we have Manish Naik and Legislation Manager, Manish. Is that correct? Okay. All right. And I think... yeah, I think that's everyone. So when I had talked with Benjamin earlier this week, we kind of wanted to talk about just some of the issues that the department is dealing with right now under the Biden administration and, you know, what type of stories you're working on, what kind of initiatives, and basically how we can help you kind of get your message out. You know, we had talked about some, I know he had mentioned, and maybe you can address this, the money under the CARES Act. I know you wanted to talk about like how districts are using that. So yeah, we could just kind of discuss that. And then we can do like a Q&A.
Yes, that's...
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I can speak to that just a little bit. You know, as I'm sure you all are reading press and seeing how following the release of a report from the Congressional Budget Office about CARES Act spending and how much has been allocated versus how much has been spent, you know, we have been fielding questions from reporters about, you know, why is it that on our website we have this tracker where all of the monies that have been obligated to states, why has that not been spent down? So we've been spending some time trying to help people understand that there is a bit of a sequence in how those monies are awarded to states and how those things are spent down by the state and allocated to what's called the subgrantee, which would be the district or the LEA, whatever that may be. So I think underlying what I'm guessing is was Ben's initial inquiry, and I definitely can second, is understanding more about how our districts are planning for use of those funds and finding ways to lift those plans up to broader audiences. So that I think is underlying that. I think to the degree that we can, we'd love to help amplify what we're learning from each of you about your thinking around those, you know, those the plans for those funds. So it's both the planning for those funds, but it's also what you're spending it on. You know, is it the HVAC? Is it the human capital? Is it, you know, the nitty-gritty facility type things? Like learning a little bit more and having some concrete anecdotes about how individual districts are doing those things, I think would be supremely helpful to us as we prepare for the secretary's arrival, you know, God willing, and he begins to become more conversant about how cities, about how district and states are thinking about this. Having those examples top of mind would be incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does anybody want to chime in on that?
I'll be happy to start. First of all, I really want to thank the Council of Great City Schools for this opportunity. I've been in Cleveland 12 years. This is my first opportunity to speak with someone at the U.S. Department of Education. Particularly important now, given that whether we've been doing this for a year or a decade or more, all of us were in a situation this year unprecedented. There was no one to look to say, how do we do this? And we all have undergone similar challenges, particularly in high poverty districts like Cleveland, Detroit, and others, that when everyone was told to go home a year ago, hard to believe it's been a year, in Cleveland, it was 40% of our families had no digital devices, no access to high-speed internet or whatever. While I don't want to belabor the point on the digital divide, one challenge that we have is not that we've lost learning for an entire year while our kids have been remote and we have scrambled to get devices and hotspots to every one of them, but we have lost time, and time costs money. So we all know in the field of education that when we do get funds, they're usually earmarked. You can only spend it for certain things. And I think that this opportunity to speak directly to you, communications people. This is my cat. I'm sorry. There's a tail right on the screen. I'm really hoping that the secretary is going to be as open to meeting with superintendents, particularly the big city superintendents, because it's not just about throwing a bunch of money there, but there are so many supports that we need to have in place in these high poverty areas that go beyond throwing money at the schools. And so I think this is a good start. We've had a Secretary of Education the last 4 years that spent a lot of time in Cleveland in our charter schools, but no time at all in our schools. And so we're looking forward to a change in that regard as well. So I don't want to take up much more time, but I think that I probably have chopped off a big chunk of what a lot of us are feeling, that we need to make up for lost time with our kids, and our kids are the most disadvantaged in the country in many cases.
No, that's good, Roseanne. Yeah. Anybody else want to chime in?
Yeah, Tanya, if I could.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is Will Jones calling from Denver. I apologize for not having video. My computer is being repaired, and the one that was given to me doesn't have a camera. But Kelly, building on what Roseanne was saying, one of the challenges we're having here in Denver is getting wireless access to all of our families. And even though we've gone out of the way to buy hotspots and provide the technology, the challenge we're having is that the infrastructure is not in some of these low-income neighborhoods. And our director of technology met with one of the wireless providers and talked about that, the possibility of having them put in infrastructure so that we can provide for our families. And they were blunt and told us that they're in this business to make money, and putting infrastructure in these areas doesn't make them money. So we're in the process of trying to figure out ways of possibly finagling some deals. Perhaps we put a cell tower on one of our buildings, then you put some technology or some infrastructure in some areas. And for me, that seems a waste, and it seems ill-guided. And so I was wondering if that's something you could put on your future boss's radar, that there are some companies out here. This company, I looked it up, they made $3 billion in profits last year. So I'm thinking infrastructure, especially during this pandemic, is something that would be something that would not only help the community, but could be something that gives them some positive publicity. And I'm wanting to try to figure out ways to work around this because our families still need this technology access, but we just don't have the infrastructure at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Wow. I have to say, well, thank you for your candor on what you heard from a corporation. That's astounding. And I think from a personal view, quite frustrating. You know, I do know that the next volume of our guidance to states and districts around reopening schools, that there will be some strategies that are articulated around addressing the digital divide. But you raise an excellent point about this. And I really thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Kelly, one other thing to mention, I hope you will not only work with the media, but challenge the media with regard to some of its understandings here. You know, the CARES Act was appropriated, pretty much at the end of a school year. We operate on state fiscal years. So most of us operate with the close of a fiscal year. It's June 30th. So we were immediately straddling two fiscal years. For people that were expecting immediate expenditures, that just was not going to be the case. And for those that are somehow claiming that the year-end $54 billion in K-12 funding under the Consolidated Appropriations Act, I don't know of one of our school districts that has actually received or had their applications for that money approved in any of our big cities. We have yet to see a dime of it, and in some instances, we haven't even seen the application packet. So hopefully you can help with their understanding, because they glob onto a CBO report and then run with it, and then try to paint us with a brush that is quite inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I hear you. In fact, I'm not afraid to partner with, but also challenge the media on how things are characterized. And I will say today already, I've talked to two reporters to deepen their understanding of these issues, particularly around the sequence of how the spending occurs, but also the additional layer of your state-specific spending plans. Like, that is an important component as well. And we know that there was some uncertainty among states about how planning would occur for budgets with respect to planning for CARES. So I appreciate that, and I hear you on the pushback around some of these salacious headlines. We want to ensure that there is accuracy, there is thoughtfulness, and we can't control everything. I'll be honest, we can't control everything, but we'll do our darndest. I promise you that.
Thank you.
Any other initiatives, Kelly, that the administration is working on?
Well, you know, I have to say, I don't want to get ahead of what the secretary, before he's arrived, is going to, share as, what his thinking is and what his priorities are. So I think that I want to wait until we're at that stage right now. But what I will share in terms of things that I think that this group, we can be particular about focusing on and maybe even, working together. I would like to look towards, a time when we are clear of the pandemic, and even before then, I imagine that the secretary will want to be out and about in states and in districts to see things firsthand. So I could see this network here, and with you, Tanya, as a liaison in helping us to find where those places are and that where he might want to be. And it could be as when it's safe to travel and not to be disruptive to our students, but I could see very much a way for us to partner in that regard. Okay. I could also see in my personal capacity as I'm interacting with reporters, being able to point reporters, often the national reporters who are reporting and their coverage is kind of driving local reporting, being able to connect a reporter to one of you to say, I heard about, you know, this going on in Cleveland. You may want to go talk to Roseanne because she will be able to give you the context about what the ground is really like in Ohio. Those are the sorts of things I want to be able to do, because oftentimes national reporters, as I'm sure all of you know, are looking for ways to localize these stories. So if we're aligned on what, you know we want to communicate, I'd be happy to draw on this group to try and make those connections so there's a seamless handoff, so to speak, when I can be helpful in helping a reporter accurately, completely, thoughtfully approach some of these issues. So those are two things offhand that I can think about, that I thought about coming into this conversation. And I'm sure in the coming days, we'll hear a little bit more about directly from the secretary after confirmation himself about the things that are top of mind for him.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's doable. Like I said, we have a really active listserv, so we're always in touch with each other. So I definitely think, you know, definitely that's something that definitely can work. Yeah. Anyone else have any other questions for Kelly?
It's not a question. Hi, Kelly. Daisy Gonzalez Diego. I'm the Chief Communications Officer for Miami-Dade County Public Schools and now also Community Engagement. I wanted to thank you. I think I want to echo the sentiments of my colleagues. Thank you for making the time to speak to us, to give us some of what you're thinking. And yeah, this is a dynamic group of individuals, professionals. It's a great resource for all of us. Miami-Dade County Public Schools did open for in-person October 5th. And I believe we're probably the district with the largest number of students in person. We have 119,000 students that have been back in school, and we continue to get more students. So we've had several challenges here. And I always welcome our colleagues. If anybody has questions about what we've been through, what we continue to go through, we're here. And also for you, Kelly, anything, any help that we might be able to offer, we're here to assist. So thank you again.
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay, anyone else?
Yeah, Kelly, my name is Patty Moon. I'm the Chief Communications Officer for Aurora Public Schools. We are just east of Denver. And something I wanted to bring up is the framing of learning loss. I think, you know, a lot of reporters tend to think summer school check, learning loss is covered and we're fine. Something our district is very mindful of is that framework and how we talk about learning loss. This really isn't going to be just summer school, right? We're going to have to deal with this over the next 3 to 5 years. So we really want to be holistic in how we approach that. And then also just being mindful that there are skills that students and families have built throughout this pandemic, right, that may need to get recognized in a different way rather than just, you know, focusing on just the loss. So that's something we're really thinking about. And at the national level, I think the conversation around that is going to be important moving forward. And, you know, throughout our districts, I'm sure we have lots of compelling stories to tell about that in the next few years. So just want to raise that.
I really appreciate that, Patty. You cut out a little bit at the end, but I like this thoughtfulness about the learning loss being a longitudinal endeavor, that it's not something that this next some odd months or even this next year will solve for, that this is that, you know, it took a year for us to find ourselves in this moment in time because of things that were beyond our control, but it will take us several years, and that our districts are planning for this over the course of several years. And that does underscore this point about the funding, if we're going to go back to the funding, why it's needed for several years, but this thoughtfulness around, you know, what it takes to address 6, 8, 9 months of learning loss and what that means over the next 2 or 3 school years, I think is a really important point. Can I ask how, as you plan for that, I mean, how does your community get visibility? Are you publishing strategic plans? Are you convening count? Like how is it that you broadcast that both to your local community and just, you know, to local press even is what I'm curious about there.
Yeah, and I'll be frank, I think we're really in the beginning of planning what the framework looks like and then, planning to launch here in the next month or two. So don't have a lot of concrete right next steps. We're still really working on making sure we have that framework right and then the right pieces and the timeline. But certainly, I mean, I think when we talk about the opportunities to accelerate learning and move forward and pass, there are just, you know, the like technical skills that students have built throughout this pandemic and their adeptness, right, in Google Classrooms and all of that. How do we utilize that as a force moving forward? So those types of things are all just, you know, we need to be mindful of and thinking about.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for indulging my follow-up.
Does anyone else want to chime in on that? What are they doing to communicate?
Hi. Kelly, thank you. My name is Kathy Koch. I'm here in Broward County. I'm the Chief Communications Officer here. Thank you. Thank you for meeting with us today. You're listening to all of my colleagues. I think we share, you know, very, very many issues. A big issue here in Broward and probably in all of our schools certainly is the equity issue that's been so dramatically brought to the forefront during the past year, not just through technology, but through where people live and their culture. And it's been difficult for many of our students. One of the things that we found is when your first question about where are dollars spent, we spent a lot of money on mental health during this past year. So not just PPE and things like that, but actually people to help people and also people to find people. There are a lot of students that we have lost. They're not showing up. And we're knocking on doors trying to find families and trying to find people because we have just hundreds of students who they've never shown up. And so not only is that a loss, but we have to find them so that we can help them. And I think another thing is that, and I think it's Patty alluded to a little bit, the technology that's been used over the last year is something that will never go back to totally, you know, where we were before COVID-19 and our required use of technology, because there have been many things that we have learned that are good things. I mean, one is this meeting here where you have people from all over the country who are able to just clock in at a certain time of day without, you know, driving, flying. And we had a webinar with 20,000 parents one night. How would we ever do that?
Wow.
And so I think at the end of this, we'll look back and see what part of technology is something that will continue to use prudently as we move forward in a positive way.
If I could, I love this, the technology piece, for better or for worse, it brings us together. The mental health support, can you share a little bit more about what that looks like in practice? Is it more personnel having more conversations with students? Is it a different kind of way that students connect to each other? If you could just help me understand a little bit about how that mental health support manifests in this environment.
Through technology, we've had to reach out to let our students know that help is still available because they're not in the schools anymore. And so we have a mobile app. So now that they can, there's a hotline that they can reach on a mobile app where they can get someone to call them back immediately, or they can just set up a time to talk. So, you know, that's a good use of technology. We've probably met with well over 7,000 students online over these past months, which never would have been, you know, even a thought before. But I think that the technology is really the only way that we can reach out. We're also offering after school help through technology, and that it's not just homework. You know, there's a lot of conversation. It's one-on-one with the teacher and a student at the end of the day. And so that's just another way that there can be the relationship that continues to be built through this technology age.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I think I saw Ben pop on. I want to give him a chance to say hello. Is that right? Is he on? Nope, okay, maybe not. Maybe that was just, I thought I saw his name come up, but sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. Someone raised their hand.
Yeah, Julie had raised her hand first. Well, we have three, but Julie was the first one.
Okay, hey, Julie.
Hi there, I'm Julie Brown, Minneapolis Public Schools. Just wanted to encourage President Biden and his staff to continue its work on race. We have the Darren Chauvin trial coming up here on March 8th. That'll begin, and it'll bring a great deal of unrest and fear for a lot of people who are already traumatized by it. But I think that's interesting too, because we realize in Minneapolis that there's also even more complexity, and that our Somali families have had a difficult time recognizing that a Somali police officer was convicted for a crime. A police officer was convicted for a crime, but there are a lot of white officers, of course, who aren't. So it's just so complex, and it continues, and it has great repercussions for our students and our staff. And I just want to encourage President Biden to just keep on and know how important that is to our kids.
Mm-hmm. Well said, and definitely heard. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. Mark Sherwood from Detroit.
Yeah, how you doing, Kelly? I think I met you when you were with Kresge here in the city. As we were opening up the School of Mary Grove, probably about 2 years ago.
Yep.
I'll be real quick, because I was just going to respond, and I know Crystal Wilson is our Assistant Superintendent of Communications. I oversee marketing for the district. But in terms of the mental health aspect, we, like many districts, certainly have a hotline available both in, during the day as well as in the evening. But we also had to open up when we went entirely virtual in November, hub sites. And these hub sites would provide wraparound services to families so they could still come to a select number of schools on a daily basis. So it wasn't just peer tech support. It was also for nursing. It was also for COVID testing. And then obviously those additional mental health supports that they might need from a family standpoint. And also for passing out and distributing our meals as well. So that I thought that was, because our families in Detroit, technology certainly was a bridge that we had to cross. It was very difficult last year. We went from a 90% disconnection, both if you combine access to internet and devices, to in the 80% plus in this time frame, both from a private-public partnership with devices and internet access to our students. So we've seen definitely a big flip and switch in terms of connectivity. But you asked that connectedness. It's also baking into the curriculum opportunities for students to actually really connect on Fridays. So it's a lot less instructional, a lot more fun Friday activities in a virtual setting. And I think those are some things that we've been working pretty hard on and trying to make sure kids are feeling a little bit, giving them the grace and care that they need right now. Mm-hmm. And us, we just opened up our learning centers yesterday, and we go back to full face-to-face for those schools that can provide it starting March 8th. So,
okay.
Quick update. I didn't want to steal Crystal's thunder, but I didn't see her on today. She must be in the middle of a media opportunity.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's good to be connected with a fellow Detroiter.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Dirk from Minneapolis Public Schools. I see you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. I've got two kids and two dogs and a husband running around in the background, so I apologize if it gets loud. I just had a question and a request. So first, the request is just that you and the Department of Ed really think of the Council of Great City Schools, and especially as us as school communicators, as important stakeholders in the work that you do, and involve us and share with us. And tied to that, I have an example, like our governor and the Minnesota Department of Education have come out a number of times recently with surprise announcements about vaccinations or returning to in-person learning. And it takes everybody by surprise. And in our Minnesota School Public Relations Group, we're all scrambling and like, what do you know? How can we communicate? And so I think the more you think of us as important partners in that work, one, it helps us do our jobs better, but two, it helps us make better advocates for the work of the Department of Education and the agenda that's happening through the Biden administration. And then my request is, my question is, what is it that you are looking for from us as member districts, and how can we get that to you? So, you know, what types of stories or videos or things that we're doing, and how is the best way to share that? Is it through Tanya and the council, who, again, I join everybody else in being so grateful to you for setting this up, or is it through direct emails or other ways? Because we have so many powerful stories and amazing things happening, and I think that we can really highlight on the ground the work that you all are doing through the department.
Mm-hmm. So on the first point, Dirk, thank you for your comments. I would say that, well, I should also share that I am one part of a very large communications and outreach division. and that we do have a whole team of people who are focused on national as well as state and local outreach, who are very, and try to be very thoughtful about engaging, informing our stakeholders. And I know that this group, I believe, is one of them. I know that we are connecting here as communications professionals to communications professionals. So I will be sure that our outreach team is like made aware of that, and to underscore this point about notice and informing, so that there is a way that this, you know, information can arrive to you, so there's no surprises, because I know that ripple effect of when something is announced, you know, what that can mean in terms of inquiries on your end. But I'll make sure that that team is aware of that. And then the second question about how to get stories to us, this is where I'll beg a little bit of grace, because I'm back here at the department, but I've been here for 1 week. So I don't have a full answer as to how we can receive things. Mm-hmm. I have heard that a simple transfer of videos from an outside entity to a federal agency is actually more complicated than it sounds. It's not as simple as just transferring a file. So I think suffice it to say, we want to hear the stories. We want to receive the testimonials. In the short term, I think working through Tanya right now is probably the best, most immediate step. And then I think in the longer term, we'll have to, as our digital team kind of comes together, think about the creative ways that we can receive those stories. I don't want to get ahead of what will happen. I'd say what could happen would be things creative on social media platforms and how we connect to each other and help to amplify solutions, help to amplify great strategies. I think those are the ways that we probably want to draw from those stories respectfully and with dignity, but use our platform to sort of elevate those solutions in ways that make sense to all of the students and educators involved, as well as all of the districts and states that are involved as well. So I don't have a full answer to that, but I hear you and I hear the excitement and enthusiasm in wanting to share those stories and share those testimonials. And we'll figure out a way to, you know, make those technicalities come together such that we can do that.
Okay. Hey, y'all, this is Ben Halley with the Department of Ed. I'm so sorry that I'm late joining. I got pulled into a last second call that I really couldn't miss, so I apologize. Just to add to Kelly's point there, I think we could also, maybe Tanya, we could work together on trying to create like some kind of like spreadsheet or like some kind of form where that we can all share that. So we're all kind of putting it in the same place. As I'm saying this, I don't know the best way to make it work, but that way we could all kind of have visibility and we could just have one place that we're all adding to.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I have definitely no problem, you know, doing that. Cause like I said, we're very connected. So, you know, that's no problem with them giving me the information and me giving it to you. We just need to see, you know, what kind of information you're looking for, because it's a gold mine out there. So just let me know, you know.
That would be great. That's great. And we could even, Kelly and I can work on kind of like a template form, not even like a form, but just like a few like questions that I think would be helpful.
Okay. Well, that's great. Okay. Anyone else?
Roseanne has a question. She had her hand up.
Sure.
Unmute here. One more comment about the mental health aspect. We, you know, in Cleveland, we have always a growing number of Hispanic students and a large Hispanic community now. And a lot of our kids went through tremendous trauma during the whole episode with ICE coming in. We had lots of cases where families that had been in Cleveland for decades, you know, were being deported. And I can just use one story to illustrate many, where we had kids that literally were losing one parent this year, another parent next year, and yet their siblings who were serving in the U.S. Army had to come back to take care of them. I mean, so many sad stories, but there's a lot to undo. of things that were done in the last 4 years when it comes to mental health and to the social and emotional learning challenges that we have in the big city school districts with disadvantaged kids whose lives were just so much further complicated by not just the pandemic and, you know, being shut down from the digital divide, but some pretty cruel and insensitive policies. And while these are immigration issues, they still are issues that affect kids in the K-12 environment, particularly in big city school districts, high poverty areas. Adult illiteracy too, while that might not necessarily fall within the realm of the kinds of conversations we're having now about really getting those success stories out about how we're, you know, overcoming a lot of these barriers. You know, we have a lot of K-12 kids, particularly urban kids, again, in high poverty areas, very disadvantaged when it comes to families in some of our neighborhoods that have a median income of $9,000. And we're trying to get them to learn computers. We're trying to get them to be able to get a GED and with their children, lift their families. And so I'm hoping that with a new administration and so many of us with hope for major change, that it'll be more than a plan with a slogan like No Child Left Behind, because poor children, poor families have historically been left behind. Even with the best of education initiatives, things have not changed all that much. And so I want to echo what Mike Casserly said at the beginning of this, that legislative conference on March 22nd is so important for people in the Department of Education to go to hear how K-12 space is impacted by laws that truly have left urban kids behind.
Thanks for sharing that. This is all really good stuff that I think I would like to, and sorry, this is Ben Halley again, to take back to our team. I think we, you know, Kelly and I are more thinking about our communications work. And I think this is all, there's a ton of policy stuff that is really like tied closely to it. So these are really, it's really good to hear. Hear that, and we'll make sure to share it with our team.
Okay. All right. Anybody else have any other questions?
Yeah. One other thing, Ben, if you you and Kelly and your team would consider from the local level, and I think it's building on a couple of things that, for example, Dirk had said. A department sends out frequent communications to the states, to the chief state school officers, and it would be very helpful if you all would consider simultaneously copying the council and other local education groups, so we could get that information down to the local level, so it doesn't have to trickle down, you know, over a multiple day or week period, and people can be more responsive to policy changes, et cetera. So if you would consider how to do that and how to better communicate those policy decisions down to the local level, that would be extremely appreciated.
Understood. Thank you. That's a really, really good point. And Kelly did mention, just as I joined late, I think our outreach team, who does who communicates with a lot of key partners, I think we can, you know, work with them too to make sure word is getting out quickly. So I will certainly pass that along, and we can talk more about how to put that into process.
Appreciate it.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Okay, I think so that's it. Thank you, Kelly and Ben, for popping in on the call. I think this was very informative. It was nice to hear from someone from the education department. It's been a while, like Roseanne said. So we definitely appreciate you coming here. And I want to thank everybody else, all the other communication directors who came on the line. And thank you to my colleagues, Jeff and Ricky and Gabby and Manish. And definitely we will be in touch, and I will be in touch with all the communication directors, and Kelly and Ben, we will be in touch. So thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet all of you. Thank you so much for all of your feedback and insights. This is invaluable. Know that it's heard and know that Ben and I will share it with our colleagues at the department. So thank you so much. This was really, really informative. Thank you.
Good. All right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.